Rich Shea here. Welcome to another episode of Recon. This time, we are going to explore Village. It was designed by Inca and Marcus Brand, originally published by Eggertspiel. An American edition has been produced by Tasty Minstrel Games and is now widely available. Because it is fairly new, I'll go through play of the game, but that's no substitute for learning the rules and reading the rule book. In fact, I'll cover play fairly deeply. Each player starts the game with four Generation 1 family members. There will be colored cubes distributed among six action areas, 18, 21, or 24 cubes for 2, 3, or 4 players. A round consists of each player in turn order, picking up one cube until the cubes run out. So that's 9, 7, or 6 turns per round. At the end of each round and the end of the game, a mass is held. There are ordinations and promotions occur in the church, and someone gets points for church dominance. Well, that's all that has to happen. But each time you pick up a cube, you may, not must, perform the action associated with the area the cube was in. That is how you score prestige points, which is how you win. The cubes don't score anything directly. Here is where two operational requirements collide. You will want to get cubes of certain colors and perform certain actions, but they might not align. You may also wish to pick up a cube to prevent another player from performing an action, because when the cubes run out on an area, that action is done for the round, unless a player wants to make an expensive trip to the wishing well. Of course, none of the areas has enough cubes to make everyone happy. Each player also starts the game with one coin, which is useful for getting family members ordained, and can serve as a wild cube. Coins are also worth a point at game end. You may get to use some to buy prestige points in the council chamber. But that's quite a trek. You will want to acquire some coins. You can do this by grinding grain at the mill in the craft area, or traveling to certain towns in the travel area. The third operational area is arranging the death of family members. You want them to have notable deaths recorded in the village chronicles, and not end up in the anonymous graves. Certain activities will cost you time. After every tenth time spent, one of your oldest family members crosses over. You remove any one of the lowest number generation members still alive. If the area they were in, which includes still being on the farm, has a corresponding space still open in the village chronicle, they go there. Once an area of the chronicle is full, the corresponding dead go into the anonymous graveyard. At the end of the game, you get 4, 7, or 12 points for 3, 4, or 5 family members in the chronicle. Now, there are only 9, 13, or 15 spaces in 2, 3, or 4 player games, so have your family members die young. You can play without using much time, but that only lowers your score, and it raises other folks. In fact, having more than 5 dead in the chronicle, blocking as it were, might make sense. All this dying also determines the length of the game. When either the chronicle or the graveyard is full, the game is over. The players who didn't cause the game to end get one more move, and a final mass is performed. Score points for trade and location of some of your folk, and if your family traveled, there will be points for that. Score the remaining money, and you are done. High score wins, of course. Note that the number of living family members is the second tiebreaker after the number of customer tiles accumulated from the market. The cubes. Most of the cubes you pick up on your turn will be useful. They notionally represent different kinds of influence, except the black cubes. Maybe they represent the wages of sin. You tick off 2 times when you pick up a black cube, and you can't skip a turn. You could use the wishing well instead, though. Typically, the black cubes are picked up last, but in fact, the penalty is not such a big deal compared to not getting a useful action. Done at just the right time, you might grab a space in the chronicle. The cubes are the required cost of many activities, usually in specific combinations, though you can often substitute some time for all cubes in paying for an action. You can use a coin as any cube, but that's expensive. There are 5 colors of cubes. Black has been explained, and all 6 of them go back in the bag to potentially be drawn each turn. The others are brown, orange, pink, and green. I'll explain how each color is used as I explain each area. A fixed number of each color, varying based on the number of players, goes into the bag each turn. Then most but not all of them are drawn and placed on the areas. This varies the game quite a bit, as the colors get randomly distributed across the board, as well as having some variety as to which ones come out of the bag and which ones are left behind. Family and family growth. You start with 4 family members labeled 1. Next, you get the 3 Generation 2 family members. Then, there are 2 each of Generations 3 and 4. You have to take them in order, and you have to remove them in order. The family growth area will have 1 cube per player, plus 1 more in 2 and 3 player games. They will probably go quickly. Once one player takes one, the other players will not want to be left out. You may use the move to relocate a family member from anywhere on the board back to the farm instead of taking a new family member. This would typically be to set up that family member to die in a chronicle eligible space, but other reasons could occur. Getting a new family member is usually better than relocating one. Grain harvest. Grain is useful for selling, promotions in the church, and getting coins in the craft area. You are limited to holding 5 grain at any time. There is no limit on ownership of any other good cube or coins. Each round, 1 cube per player is placed in the grain harvest space. When you take a cube from the space and you have at least 1 family member on your farmyard, you get 2 bags of grain. If you also have a plow and a horse, you get 3 bags instead. A plow and an ox gets 4 bags instead. 2, 3, or 4 is the most you can get, never multiples, even from multiple sets of things. None of the objects are consumed, and no time passes. This is another space you don't want to miss out on. Once the cubes start going, everyone better grab one. Crafts. Crafts is the most numerous move, and it doesn't score any points directly. You make or buy things that you use in other actions. You can devote a family member to a specific craft and pay time to produce a good when you take a cube from the craft area. Alternatively, you can pay influence cubes or grain without having committed a family member. The exception is the mill. 2 grain and 2 time are spent, 2 coins are received. When you dedicate a family member, they are moved to a craft building and some time is spent. Think of it as apprenticeship. They then pay the time cost for actually making an item associated with that building. As long as they are there, they can make another by just paying the cost to make it when another cube is selected from the craft area. The time costs add up, with 4 to 6 times spent to get the first item. Someone will pass over soon, but that can be okay. The problem is that after spending all that time, you don't want to lose the trained person. So plan to have someone die somewhere else so that you can get a few goods out of your investment. The Wainwright builds a wagon. It costs 2 time to place a family member and 2 for each wagon built. Alternatively, you can pay a pink and orange cube and take a wagon. Wagons can sell at the market, and you need one for each travel move, which can total up to 6 wagons, so you will want at least a few. The stables produce horse and oxen. You place a family member for 3 time and produce either kind of animal for 3 time. This adds up fast. The purchase price is 3 grain, which you notice is more than 1 harvest action if you aren't plowing. Aside from the advantages in harvest, horses and oxen sell for the most at the market. The interesting trade-off is oxen to get more grain or horses for more points in the market. Of course, if you can hold on to a mix, you have the most flexibility. The office makes scrolls. You place a family member for 2 time and produce a scroll for 2 time. Or you can buy one for a pink cube. Scrolls can be sold, but they are mostly useful for the council chamber. The scroll is the cost of each move up in the council chamber. The alternative cost is 2 green cubes, so scrolls are good to have. The smithy makes a plow. It costs 3 time to place a family member, and 3 time to make each plow. Instead, you can pay a pink and orange cube. Plows may be the least useful trade good. You can sell them, but only one is useful at a time, and you don't expend them to get grain. You can almost guarantee a family member will pass if you take a black cube in craft and use a family member for a plow. Market. There are 25 customer tiles in the game. There are 3 optional bonus tiles available, too. Generally, you'll spend a green cube and a time to execute each trade, unless you initiated the market. You should try to be prepared to pay for and execute some trades, even if you didn't select market. The tiles vary in value from 2 to 7, with 1 of each of these values. 3s are the most common, with 9 tiles. There are 7 4s, 3 5s, and 4 6s, 103 total points for an average of 4 points per tile. The other way to look at them is, which goods do you need to have in order to make a sale? 8 tiles require a single good. 1, a plow. 2, an ox. 2, a wagon. 3, a horse. 4 more require a single kind of good. 2 sell 3 grain, 4 grain, and 2 scrolls. 5 sell grain with another good. 2 grain plus a scroll, grain plus a plow, grain plus an ox, and 2 grain plus a horse. The remaining 8 are each possible pairing of 2 different goods. I haven't listed the points you get for each tile, because you can calculate them. Each good is worth a fixed amount. Grain are worth 1, scrolls and plows are worth 2. Oxen are worth 3, horses are worth 4 points. So horses trade for more, and oxen get more grain, even though they cost the same to produce. The bonus tiles are jokers. 3 points by returning the first player ring might be a fair price, especially if having someone else grab it is unlikely or you don't care. A scroll for an extra point for each pair of tiles at the end of the game is liable to be a bargain if you're trading actively. The point for just trading is potentially better than nothing. If you can trade a lot and not have other folks match you, it's a very strong strategy. But I don't think experienced players will let you get away with that. Grabbing green cubes and making goods is required preparation, so you won't be fooling anyone. You can't just rely on selecting the one cube for market and making one sale. When you're spreading out, remember that you can get green cubes from travel and council chamber, as well as selecting them off the board. The tiles are scored at the end of the game, and having the most tiles is the first tiebreaker. Travel. Using travel as a strategy means you want to have family members visit most, if not all, of the towns in the travel area. Each move costs 2 time, a wagon, and 2 or 3 cubes. That's really expensive. You do get a reward for each visit, but the real objective is points at the end of the game. It starts off slow, but you get 18 total points if you travel to all the towns, as from the third town on, you get 3, then 4 more points for each additional town. And the immediate rewards you can collect altogether are a coin, 2 cubes, or 3 points from each town. The cost seems very high. You'll spend 12 time, 6 wagons, and between 15 and 16 cubes to visit all the cities. You'll pick up 4 cubes, plus up to 6 when you take the action, 2 coins, and 24 prestige points if you complete the circuit. You'll probably have to use the wishing well, though, if there is any competition for traveling. Just visiting the 2 towns closest to the gate is worth 9 prestige points, which is a pretty good haul, and if you then kill off your traveler soon enough to grab one of the slots in the book, you've made a good set of moves. Travel is a solid strategy. Other players may pick up some travel area cubes just to hinder travel. I'm not sure that is worth a lost action for them, so being ready for at least one travel move is solid play, even if you aren't planning to travel heavily. Council Chamber. The Council Chamber is very interesting. It is the only way to change first player, and the moves open up a set of rewards that can be very flexible, but advancement is expensive. There are also only one or two spaces in the book for council members. Placement or advancing costs a scroll or two green cubes and 1 to 3 time. Along with the market, this is the only use for green cubes. Okay, you can use them at the wishing well. You can use a family member in the council chamber without advancing them, though. And that can give you serious flexibility. But the benefits for advancing mean you would prefer to advance your family member. This capability is easy to overlook when learning the game. In each turn, the first player to start a new family member there or use the council chamber can claim the ring denoting first player in the next turn. The second position gives you 2 cubes of any color and 2 prestige points at the end of the game if the family member is still there. The third position gives you a choice of any goods tile and is worth 4 points at the end of the game. Now, you don't want a family member who will die before the game ends. The last position lets you buy 3 prestige points for 1 coin just once and is worth 6 points at game end. This is a good use of a spare coin. From any spot, you can also take any lesser benefit instead of the one the move grants you. In early plays, I overlooked that you can use the council chamber without advancing. Just take the cube and use the privileges of a family member already there. A free horse or ox is at least as good as 3 prestige points for a coin, except very near or at the end of the game. The 2 cubes move can be used to take 2 pink cubes that you use to buy scrolls to finance the rest of the trip to the top. Crowding into the council chamber seems less solid than the church because there are no points for dominance, but the fact is that you can get substantial benefits from it with or without advancing. So having one family member in there can be a solid play. Getting 2 family members to the top in the council chamber is worth about 24 points, 12 for placement and 12 for goods to sell or use, or just the coin for points. Plus, you can grab the first player ring if you want it. It will be expensive, especially as you will probably have to use the wishing well to get enough actions. Below, we'll talk about first player with the wishing well. Playing into the church is the most convoluted strategy. Family members do not go directly into divine orders. A family member goes into the black bag at a cost of a brown cube or 3 time, and there they stay at least until the round end, when a mass is said. In turn order, each player may select family members from the bag for 1 coin apiece until everyone has had a chance to pay. If fewer than 4 have been ordained, random draws are then made from the bag until a total of 4 have been ordained, counting the paid draws against the 4 also. Each mass starts with 4 black meeples in the bag to make random draws more exciting. Maybe it's better to say that if less than 4 family members are bought out of the bag, then random draws are made so that 4 meeples have come out of the bag. Yeah, that's the way to say it. It's probably the most confusing rule in the game. One note is that family members in the bag are immune from dying. Apparently, religious training was very healthy. Once ordained, you may promote family members in the church by paying grain. Each step costs 1, 2, or 4 grain and changes endgame points for the family member from 2 to 3 to 4 to 6. Advancing only once at the church is the most efficient way to use grain there, but higher ranks may be useful for church dominance. After each mass, a 2-point award is made for the player with dominance in the church. This is determined by the number of family members ordained. Highest rank is a tiebreaker, but after that, the tie is friendly and all players get the points. Church is a strong strategy. It's not too expensive for the points, and if you can dominate, you can pick up 6 to 10 points as well as the endgame points. You will want a lot of wheat to rise in the hierarchy, but you only need to do that with one family member to win ties for dominance. The wishing well. You may make a move without picking up a cube. You discard 3 identical cubes and take any move. The only restriction is that there must still be at least 1 cube left on the board, so you are giving someone an extra turn as well as spending 3 cubes. You'll still want to do this because you either 1. Need to make a move, but the cubes are gone, especially with travel or market. 2. Have cubes you will not otherwise use and don't want to take an available move, especially for a black cube. Remember that you can make a set using coins as wild cubes too. The first trip to the wishing well in a round gives the start player an extra turn, which is fine if it's you, but potentially a problem otherwise. So grabbing the first player for the next turn sets you up for the wishing well. Winning. The consensus is that this game is strategically balanced. Early claims that church or travel are broken were refuted. Trade can be a killer strategy, but only if the other players don't plan to participate. The rule that applies most is that any strategy no one else is using is a good one. Beyond that, as John Weber has pointed out in an analogy to Puerto Rico, careful examination of the actual board player situation is more important than determining strategy based on your personal preference or even what you have been doing so far. The most common problem for new players is an attempt to conserve the time resource. It seems counterintuitive to see your meeple's lifespan as a resource to be consumed to your advantage. That lasts only for a game or two. Then you'll be knocking them off of the Bandon, hoping for a prestigious burial. Figure that all your Generation 1 family members are expendable, so don't place them for game-end scoring. You would like to have one Generation 2 family member die to maximize points, and you might need to have another expendable in case you miss a spot in the book with one death or need to end the game. Games you play while learning Village will run long, both because you are going slow while learning, but also because players will be reluctant to kill off family members. Soon, though, your games will accelerate as you race to fill the chronicle. Ending in the fourth round will be typical. Playing into a fifth round will seem long. Since total points is mostly controlled by game length, I don't think it's worth much discussion. Groupthink will determine how much total scoring is possible. Point differential is the key, of course. Single strategy play will only work when everyone is learning the game. After that, you need to dominate in one area, but participate in at least two more. I am pretty sure at this point that you cannot win without some serious participation in trade. You should be willing to sell off some goods, even the ones you use for your dominant strategy, in order to both get some trade points and keep other players from getting three or four tiles in a single trade session. Managing time is tricky. Know which family member you intend to go next, and maybe extract one more use from them before they pass over. In my last game, I put my last Generation 1 family member in the council chamber to both get the first player ring and have him die to fill the last spot in the chronicle for politicians, and that set me up for using the wishing well in the next round, with me keeping the extra move as first player. Village is a surprisingly deep game worth play and study. I'll be teaching it at TotalCon and look forward to many fun plays. Thanks for listening to Recon. Up next will be Trajan. Pronunciation corrected by my son. He's the one with a degree in classical studies. Fortunately, the other half of the degree is in computer science, so he'll probably be gainfully employed.